Squire, Professor of Clinical Tropical Medicine and Dean of Clinical Sciences and International Public Health from the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. Bertie, morning to you. I know you're not here in a political capacity whatsoever, but what are your thoughts from where you are on the tier system at the moment? Do you think it will work and it will lower infections?
Morning, and good to talk to you as always.
You too.
It's such an uncertain time, isn't it? I want to start by acknowledging that these restrictions that people face are really tough, and I think none of us should minimise the effect that they're having on livelihoods. And I think that the clip you just played makes a really important point that it's really hard for people to adhere to these restrictions when livelihoods are so fragile. The second thing I wanted to say is that I actually got up early this morning to look back at what's happened when, and I don't know about you, but it is difficult to keep track of what restrictions were introduced when and what has happened to COVID infection numbers alongside those changes. But when I look back, it broadly looks like this. So in mid-September, when the rule of six came in, the numbers in Liverpool were 86 per 100,000 population, and the percentage of tests coming back positive was 6%. By the beginning of October, when we went into no mixing between households, those numbers had gone up to 278 per 100,000, and this positivity rate was 16%. And then on the 14th of October, we went into tier three. And at that point, the numbers were 659 per 100,000, and the positivity rate 18%. As of yesterday, that number had come down to 577 per 100,000, and it looks like it might be plateauing. Mm. So I have hope that this tier may actually help just bring those numbers down. I'm just looking at what's happened locally, and those are the facts. So I'm holding on to them.
Well, we have to really, don't we? I mean, really interesting figures you gave us there, September. I think you said 86% to where we are now, and you feel as though it has plateaued. What about the timeline from March, April, May, and June to August, September, October, and where we are now? Is that a similar plateauing earlier this year? What I'm trying to say is, does that continue on? Is that quite uniform, where it rises, plateaus, then comes down again?
I don't think we know, if I'm honest, if you're thinking about what may happen from here on. If we think back to March, April, May, we had really, really high numbers then, much higher than the ones I've just been describing. Certainly in terms of hospital admissions. Then they came down to really low numbers. But the thing that we all, I think, need to remember is that the infection and transmission never went away. It just went down to a really low level. And then as the colder months have come in and as we've eased off, those numbers have risen. And there's a lag between the measures that get put in, so these restriction measures. What you can see is that there's a lag between the reduction in social mixing that we achieve and the bringing down of numbers. And I think what we all probably need to look in the eye is that the numbers are going to go on being high in these winter months, and we just need to do the best we can to keep them as low as possible, mainly to protect vulnerable and older people and to keep the hospital admission rates from spiralling.
That is the key at the moment. And we're working, there's a lag as well, isn't it? So what we're doing today and what we've been doing over the past week or so, we won't really see the impact for another 2 or 3 weeks, maybe. I've got that right, haven't I?
You have, and it may actually be in some instances a bit longer. So that's why I was going over those numbers. Yeah. And really, it's taken 2 weeks from the start of our pubs shutting, we're just seeing kind of layer on layer effect of each of these restrictions. But there is a lag. and it takes about 2 weeks for it to have an effect on community numbers, and then at least another 2 weeks to have an effect on hospital admissions, because hospital admissions lag behind the community numbers.
How do you think reopening gyms will help people's mental? I mean, clearly it's going to help physical health, but we've had a couple of guests on this week. And one in particular, we had a guest called Jamie on, who just called us up out of the blue on Tuesday and said, my gym is closed and I don't go to look like Arnie. I go because it helps me with my mental health. And when I go there in the middle of the night because I have insomnia, there are other people there as well in a similar situation. And Jamie is an NHS worker, so he's put a shift in through the day and then his mind is wearing away through the night, you know, and he needs gyms. Yeah. Was this a smart move, do you think?
Well, I think there's absolutely no doubt that exercise is really closely linked to mental well-being. When we exercise, it releases endorphins. They raise the mood, and they raise the outlook. And I definitely think that the more we can do to promote exercise, the better. And it's not just about, yeah, as you say, looking like Arnie. It's definitely about how you feel, your outlook on the world. Mm. So definitely, I'm a great fan of exercise. And I think if the gyms are safe and are careful about, hands, face and space, then and they can be part of promoting exercise, yes, let's do that. But remember, exercise is also possible outside.
Safe, of course. Safe ever. Because we are allowed to do that in whichever tier that you're in. Can I just ask you this question? I mean, the gym's open, but the soft play centre's closed. And from what we know about this virus, with very, very young children, yeah, it's not as virulent, or the numbers are very, very low. And there will be owners of soft play centres saying, well, now we're closed, we're confused. It has been really confusing for people. But when it comes to transmission with small children, I mean, there's a very low chance there, isn't there? So you can probably understand why those centres, you know, are worried and frustrated that they've had to close.
Yes, I think that this is a tough one. It's worth remembering that the transmission between children is small but not absent. And when you think about a soft play centre, it's not just that the children are there, but you have adults there, and so what you're looking at is lots of surfaces, lots of difficult areas to keep people apart. Difficult even for the adults who are involved in the soft play centres to really, really observe those distancing. So it's all about just trying to make the decisions that reduce those transmission potentials, and it's sad where we draw the line, isn't it? But
yeah, of course.
But I think on balance, it's the right thing to be cautious about those soft play centres.
And we're just going to finish, as we have done for most of this year, with a crumb of comfort. You wanted to mention the Decade of Health campaign, Bertie. Fire away.
Thank you very much. So this is a campaign funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which really highlights the research being carried out in the UK, which benefits the health of people globally. And it showcases the UK's groundbreaking work in science and innovation, with LSTM as an institution dedicated to breaking the cycle of poor health and poverty. It's great to see my colleagues Emily Adams and Daniela Ferreira profiled in the campaign. And you can read more about it on the website, www.decadeofhealth.co.uk. And the reason I wanted to mention it is that it exemplifies to me this week's crumb of comfort, which is the power of pulling together. And I hope I've tried to show that first, we in Liverpool are beginning, I think, to show that solidarity with each other to respect these restrictions has the potential to bring the COVID numbers down. Mm. And second, that I wanted to put a shout out there for the pulling together that we've seen from the people of Liverpool, who stepped up to enroll in the Oxford vaccine study, so that over 200 participants in the older age group make Liverpool the site that has contributed most people from that to the trial. So, you know, I think the power of pulling together is really what I want to put out there today.
Bertie, as ever, when we can, I'll certainly come and see you and buy you a pint or a coffee or whatever your vice may be. But thank you very much indeed, and to you and the rest of your colleagues as well. Thank you. Take care.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Bertie was talking about the Decade of Health campaign. Let me just play you this little clip here. It's another little explainer. Here we are.
If the R number continues to grow at this rate, we could
days ago describe further lockdown.
Local hospitals are facing increasing pressures to keep up.
Tonight, our top story, a potential UK breakthrough in the search for a global vaccine.
Participants exhibited.
Significante neutralización del virus.
It's a game changer. There really isn't any other way to describe it.
That it's over, we are seeing funds redirected to fight other diseases.
As cycle lanes increase in popularity,
our air quality is continuing to improve.
Studies have shown that these new chemically treated bed nets are saving lives across the world.
A treatment that allows a baby to see for the first time.
Recovery rates skyrocket,
revolutionising the health industry.
Still got it.
One of 10 years it's been.
People across the UK are working to make this future of health a reality for everyone.
This is dedicated to the one I love.
Isn't that good? That is looking 10 years into the future.
The next 10 years, hopefully, is
the Decade of Health,
like.
Looking back the way we are now and 10 years into the future. And yeah. What a perfect song to pick.
We
do you know that
we're
song?
Both singing along to it, the Mamas and the Papas.
Before you go to bed, my baby. Do you know what? You know what?